Most noteworthy was the Prussian-dominated customs union, the Zollverein, developed in much of Germany between 1819 and 1834, which Austria was not permitted to join. And this is curious, because Austria and Germany really did cooperate at the Confederation. And during this time period, Prussia did accept secondary place to Austria at the Confederation. But the one area in which it would not accept secondary place was in its own economic development. And this customs union, from which Austria was excluded, did help to both tie the northern German states more closely together and to expand their economy at a faster pace than the Austrian economy was expanding at that time. And a lot of Austria's problems during the middle of the century and thereafter really were going to be a kind of comparative economic underdevelopment with respect to Prussia. Even under lackluster Prussian monarchs, not very competent at all, Frederick William III and Frederick William IV, Prussian military and educational reforms were impressive, as was the efficiency of its bureaucracy. In other words, those earlier Hohenzollern monarchs had really built well in a way in which the state could continue on its own, even under other weak monarchs. In fact, on the eve of the French Revolution, the liberal aristocrat in France, Mirabeau, called Prussia already a policed state. Not a police state, a policed state, a barracks state, a well-organized, regimented, bureaucratized state, and that continued. And that has a lot to do with the ability to focus power in time of need. Austria, meanwhile, spent more time dealing with liberal or national threats within its large and multinational empire than on any serious process of reform at home. Austria's task was far more difficult than Prussia's because it was larger and because many of the people who were part of it didn't want to be there, and the Austrians were always having to figure out how to repress them at the lowest possible cost. Even as both Prussia and Austria struggled against any liberal or democratic or nationalist forces within their domains, especially in the more near-term post-revolutionary era and during the revolutions of 1830, a variety of constitutionalist, nationalist, and even some socialist agendas grew in intensity during the era of Metternich. Again, as the economy continued to develop, as the legacy of the French Revolution continued to be present, more and more members of the middle class had more and more education, more opportunity to think, more opportunity to question, and they had questions. This was therefore hastened by the development of this urban middle class, especially in larger cities, and by the fact that the conservative forces severely failed to co-opt almost any of these newer economic and intellectual elites, placing liberals, radicals, nationalists in the same persona non grata category of those not wanted. And there were always German émigrés during this time period, German revolutionaries, radicals, even liberals, in Geneva, in Paris, in London, and after the revolutions of 1848, as we know so well, in the United States. In fact, even before the revolution of 1848, the German migration was one of the very, very largest migrations, both before and after 1848, for economic reasons, but also clearly for reasons of political liberty. This only served to further frustrate all of these proponents of change, ready to erupt at almost any moment, especially given the agrarian urban economic calamities of 1846 and 1847. As discussed earlier, although the initially successful revolutions that broke out throughout the German states and the Austrian Empire in early 1848 mostly ended in failure in 1849, the status quo was badly shaken, especially in terms of Austro-Prussian relations, which was one of the core issues that had preserved the peace and stability and order of the previous era.